newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project is an opportunity for us to have a half hour of commentary and analysis, and some days even some insight into news media issues that are confronting us. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio himself.
Good morning, Your Rexiness.
Yeah, thank you very kindly. Great to see you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good day.
That's right. Maybe it's the middle of the night when you're listening.
It could be.
You can listen at any time at WAMC.org.
You can get the app at WAMC.
Good. Very good. Barbara Lombardo is there, journalism professor at the University of Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record in Troy.
Delighted
Hello.
To be here.
Wonderful to see you. Absolutely. And Judy Patrick, vice president of the New York Press Association, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
I'm delighted as well.
How great it is that we're all here and happy
delighted,
to be here.
Delighted. Except the guy at the end.
Hey, Rex, I had a
here
topic.
He goes.
I had a topic I wanted to throw out. I wondered if it's acceptable or not, because you are the commander of the program.
Yes.
The question is this. Are newspaper people so sensitive
Such
that they don't want to hear from anyone, particularly political people, who say, you know, what you're doing here is not quite right? I'm thinking of a story that I recently heard of a publisher who didn't like the fact that a local rep was putting out an objection to the way the newspaper was handling things. Is it that the newspapers think that nobody has a right to criticize them?
Good heavens. Well, we publish letters to the editor, critical of us all the time. We take phone calls. Judy?
So, you know, I think historically we have been a little defensive. And it was something when I was an editor I worked at, not to have my first reaction be, I'm right, you're wrong. I think we saw that a little bit this week with the New York Times when they corrected their headline. The Twitterverse went crazy when they, this was after President Trump gave his initial speech about after the shootings in Dayton and El Paso, and Twitter hated the fact that their initial headline, they thought it was way too kind to the president.
Liberals attacked the New York Times because of the headline that said, Trump urges unity versus racism. That was the initial print headline, right?
Oh, yeah, and within minutes.
I thought that was so ridiculous. As those of us in the news business know, sometimes you hit a home run with a headline, and a lot of times you just want to get on base, and sometimes you make a mistake. And for people to say they were canceling their subscriptions, that is biting off your nose to spite your face. And I thought that it raised a lot of interesting questions that could be discussed about the role of a headline and the role of the newspaper's attitude toward things.
Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting conversation. Just to be clear, just so people who are prone to believe in conspiracies in newsrooms might not jump to this conclusion, the print edition of the New York Times is created without the executive editor, the managing editor, what they call the masthead, the leadership of the Times, does not choose now what stories go on the front page. They don't review the headlines. This is done by a separate unit, the print team.
But it's not a low level unit. They're high level.
No, but they're
editors,
not on the masthead.
They're not the top level.
So in this particular case, Dean Baquet, the executive editor, explained that he didn't see the headline until sometime after 9 p.m. after the first edition was out, and by that time, there had already been a change. The Times print editor, a guy named Tom Jolly, had already changed it. It's hard to do this on radio because Trump urges unity versus racism is the initial headline after the president's speech that he read from the teleprompter at the White House. They changed it to assailing hate but not guns.
And I had a problem with that change
mm-hmm.
because that is still a point of view. And I think that the Times cowered to the hubbub about the initial headline. And it also shows the difficulty of writing headlines and making it fit a space. And you're trying to come up with keywords in a very short amount of space and a short amount of time. time. But still, that is a point of view to decide what are we going to focus on that our readers will be interested in. Yes, he assailed hate, but he didn't address guns. If we were going to take the time and do a little game of it, we could probably come up with a number of different headlines. It's difficult.
It's hard.
But that's still a point of view. It's just not an objectionable point of view.
To the left.
To the left.
Well, Rex, I wanted to take some issue with something you said for a change. And that had to do with the idea that there was a separate team so that you couldn't blame the top guy or top guys.
I didn't say you can't blame him. I'm just explaining the situation there.
They do take responsibility.
Yeah, he said, it's my responsibility. I'm the editor.
Well, that's my point. I think your position has been somewhat defensive, as usual, you know, about the role of the press. And I took offense at that Times headline, too.
Well, of course, because you're on the left. It's your political bias. Of course you were offended.
Well, it's not bias. It's accurate. It's true.
But there's another issue that Judy raised. Judy raised the point about there's often a defensiveness on the part of journalists that it's you have to choke down that you have made a mistake. And then you can argue about whether that was a mistake or not. There was something in the news just the other day where Nicole Wallace, she misspoke about Trump calling for an extermination of Latinos. So she tweeted, "My mistake was unintentional and I'm sorry." But she didn't stop there. She couldn't stop there. She had to go on and say how his assault on people of color and Latinos and the word invasion is intentional and constant. She couldn't just say, "I'm sorry." She had to still put another dig in. I know she's not a news person. She's a commentator more, but the...
Yeah, she's a former... She was, you know, White House communications director under George W. Bush, and she's now on NBC.
The inability to just say, "I made a mistake, I'm sorry," period, I think hurts the credibility of journalists.
I don't know. You know, we have a president who, in my mind, is the worst thing that we have seen in this country during my lifetime, who threatens to lead this country into totalitarianism. And I think she was absolutely appropriate to make that point. This is a terrible man who reminds me of Benito Mussolini. And as far as I'm concerned, it's just it's getting worse and worse. And yeah, you make a mistake, you should correct your mistake, but you should make it clear that you're not letting them off the hook.
I agree that you need to be thoughtful in your presentation to be analytical. And what I liked about the second headline at the Times, as long as we're talking about that, "Assailing Hate But Not Guns," is that it was interpretive. It was not just what the first headline was, which was "Just the facts, ma'am." It was "Trump urges unity versus racism." That is repeating what he said, without giving any second thought to whether what he said was actually what he was doing, which I think is the responsibility of journalism when our goal is, as the first tenet of the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists says, seek the truth and report it as fully as possible. The second headline came closer to the truth of what was really there, though the first headline had what he said precisely, right?
Yeah, you know, Rex, that's an interesting point because... Not that I want to defend anybody here, but let's face it. The idea here is you could put a headline and say, always say, but he didn't say all the things that he didn't say. So that's tough. You can say he said, that's accurate. But there's a lot of things you could say that he didn't say.
And the stories below the headline were full of the nuance that you really needed to appreciate the full context of what happened in that speech, how he talked, all the other things that he has said and done, and how the community reacted. The initial headline was factually correct, it's true, but it did not give the truth of what the speech was about.
So now we have to decide, because the three of you are newspaper editors and have known over the years that people read the headlines and very little else.
Exactly.
And they blame you for the headlines. And the reporter always says, "I don't get to write the headlines."
I think there was a reporter in this neck of the woods that once had business cards, and on the cards it says, "I don't write the headline."
I love that. I don't blame them one bit for doing that.
But going back to Alan's original point, I do think that the media tends to be defensive, but I think we're getting better at not being defensive.
I think you're right, because, I mean, everybody's defensive, aren't they, about their work? No. But I mean, in our defense, which Alan's going to say, see, you didn't even have to do anything here, Alan. I'll just play your part too. In our defense, we do have more transparency than other businesses. I mean, what other business throws open the doors and writes about the problems that its business is facing, or actually has coverage, or what other business publishes its own corrections and says, we really screwed up here?
Sometimes good about publishing news about ourselves and sometimes not. I thought it was interesting in the Times with Dean Baquet, that he, talking about the headline issue, that he talked about the he believes that the role of the newspaper is not to be the de facto opposition to Trump, but to lay out the information. And in a way, I think they have a responsibility to be a de facto opposition to Trump, and they can be, and often they are, two ways. One, the editorial page and the columnists. But beyond that, every decision that's made at the Times or at any newspaper, they decide what they're going to cover, what choice of issues to focus on, what tack to take, how to present it, when to present it, how often to say it, what to put in the stories. And by doing that responsibly, you end up being opposition to Trump because you're letting the public know the terrible things that are happening. You're letting the public know what is the truth versus what he is saying. You're going beyond just the tweets and reporting the news, climate change, and what's really happening with the gun control.
What he really did with his business is all those years ago.
Yeah.
And going back to the defensiveness issue, we are experts and we do have experience that the average person on the street doesn't have. So we come to every decision we make with a certain amount of knowledge and expertise. So sometimes we do know best. I know, I can hear it.
Well, I was down at the Fassett-Tipton horse auctions the other night and ran into three people who were involved in the Saratoga Springs Democratic Party, and they were among this group where half the party has resigned.
Yeah,
and
great convulsion going on there.
Yes, there's a lot going on about that.
Mm-hmm.
And although I've been away from the Saratogian for 4 years now, I got an earful about how the day of or before the primary where their candidate lost, the Saratogian had this huge picture and story of the opposition supporters. Hmm. And how could they do that the day of, how irresponsible that was? And I actually found myself getting defensive, saying, they shouldn't have done that, but they're not well-staffed and well-organized enough to have intentionally caused this harm. It's not even laid out here. It's laid out in some other state.
Right.
So let's go back for a moment, if we can, to the New York Times. There are two ways to look at this. Baquet says, we're not here as representatives of the anti-Trump group, if that's what he said, Rex.
He said, I don't believe our role is to be the leaders of the opposition party.
In fact, they are. And the reason that they are is that Trump is a very, very bad and dangerous man. That happens to be fact. So they have been taking that role, and they've been doing it as far as I'm concerned.
You can't just say that happens to be fact. There are many people, including a few listeners of WAMC, who support Donald Trump and believe that he's a good leader. And while you may disagree with him, how can you say that a media outlet needs to be a partisan outlet? So that's just like the New York Post.
It's easy for me to say because it happens to be true. It happens to be true that this guy is leading this country into totalitarianism. We know it, into fascism and to anti-immigration. And the fact is that we know that this is the case. Now, if the New York Times was defending the indefensible, that would be different.
Now, you have to understand that there are some people on the left that insist that the New York Times leans too far over backward in support of the president.
And that was the point of this woman from the Nation, Joan Walsh, who said that she was canceling her subscription as a result of that headline. I just can't take it anymore. And so a lot of people on the left were so upset by that headline that quoted Trump directly from his speech at the White House that they canceled their subscription. But Alan would say, no, it's appropriate to have, I think you actually went further than the Times, you want to have biased coverage that very clearly.
I do not. Yeah, I never said I want biased coverage.
Do. Yes,
I think that we, this is Barbara, that you and I, Alan, want, and probably all of us, want the same type of coverage that's thorough and in-depth in context, and that we feel, or I feel, that the news that will be reported in so doing will reveal why this is a terrible administration, why the president should not be reelected, why Mitch McConnell's got to go, why things aren't happening in Congress.
Well,
that the reporting itself, though, shouldn't be biased.
I deeply resent Rex's inaccurate characterization of the fact that I want to be biased. I want to be accurate. And it is accurate that this is a terrible president.
when you talk to Trump supporters, and I do talk to Trump supporters, one of their criticisms of the media is that you guys never focus on the good things the president does.
Right.
And so I think that the New York Times does try to focus on any positive impact his presidency is having, because if we are perceived as so negative to the president, we will lose credibility, because we are supposed to report to all the people in America, not just those who support.
Okay, so let's assume. So let's assume for a second that the president comes along and does something right and says, okay, we are going to check out, we'll do background checks on everybody who wants to buy a gun.
Something right as interpreted by Alan Shardock.
Well, as interpreted by a majority of American public who believe should be stronger background checks.
You can send me your bill. Okay, so if the Times now goes ahead and says, we've talked to people in the White House where there's chaos because the president is doing so badly in public opinion on this gun control thing that they went ahead and they did this. That's interpretive, right? But it's also, they would be blamed for saying that, for saying what his motives were in doing it.
People blame the media for being biased when actually what we're doing is reporting what's really going on. Yes, absolutely. Because when you report the chaos in the White House, the president's supporters don't like that. But it's factual. It's true. I was just objecting to your assertion that it is fact that Donald Trump is leading us into
totalitarianism.
That is an interpretation.
I'm worried about it.
I'm worried about it personally, but I don't call that a fact. I would call that my concern, my interpretation of facts.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to jump in here, you can write a letter to Rex Smith at the Media Project.
Right. Media@wamc.org. And I don't think we have any conservative listeners who are going to write in.
We do. Sure. We do.
Right. Not anymore.
No. Not since you became the leader of the opposition party, Alan, taking the place of Dean Baquet. No, it is Alan Shartok who is. Let's see. What's this? I don't believe our role is to be the leaders of the opposition party. Take note of the fact that Alan said, yes, that is.
He's stepping up.
Mm-hmm. I did not.
Tucker Carlson.
No, back to the tape.
Stop, Fox News. It is so clear that what I said was that if, in fact, the facts are that this is a terrible president who is leading us into fascism, then it's an appropriate role for the New York Times to take that lead. I didn't say that they should be the opposition party. Now, you know that, Rex, and I demand an immediate apology.
We'll listen to the tape later. So I just wanted to add to that, or maybe wrap it up with it. Tucker Carlson had said these ridiculous, horrible things on Fox, as he is wont to do, that hate and extremism, just saying that basically that the white supremacy stuff is a hoax, just like the Russian hoax. It was just the kind of stuff that I don't know why I haven't had a heart attack yet, because I don't listen to him regularly. But what I wanted to point out was that yesterday, Shepard Smith, who is an afternoon news anchor for Fox News, although he didn't name Tucker Carlson, he called out that type of rhetoric.
Yeah.
And very succinctly and strongly, as he often does. I hope this doesn't get him fired.
Well, this is why Shep Smith has a smaller audience.
Well,
he's in a list of, you know, great time slot
in
Fox.
But he did the kind of thing that we want reporters to do. He recited the facts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And maybe the Fox listeners that could stand to listen to him between 3 and 4, maybe somebody heard that he's speaking the truth. And that's what, no matter what our outlet is, you know, NPR, the New York Times, the Gazette, Fox News, that we need to actually be reporting the reality.
And even there, one wonders when Fox actually hires a speaker of truth, whether or not that's to raise their own credibility so that their mouthpieces for the president can go ahead.
Well, it throws the bone and it gives the guy the smaller audience.
Yes, yeah, sure. Put him in a time slot where he can't do much damage with the right-wing audience. Margaret Sullivan's lead, you know, Margaret Sullivan, the media writer now for the Washington Post and former editor of the Buffalo News, her lead on a story about that was, in his ongoing and remarkably successful quest to be the worst of the Fox News nighttime hosts, Tucker Carlson hit a new low on his Tuesday show. And Shep Smith gets called out and praised by Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, which is an indication that the guy doesn't really adhere to the line that Fox News generally does. Interesting. Speaking of departing from the company line, in the aftermath of the shootings in El Paso and Dayton, the New York Post had a front page editorial demanding that there be gun control. The front page read, "It's time to ban weapons of war. President Trump, America is scared, and we need bold action." This is really surprising coming from the New York Post, isn't it?
In fact, when I first read it, I said, did they get the paper wrong?
Yeah.
I did too. Really the Daily News?
It looked more like the Daily News. It was really quite shocking.
Now, we have to assume, don't we, Rexy and group, that since the iron law of oligarchy prevails, meaning that whoever sits at the top of an organization scratched their heads and said, you know, this is just too much. So here's old man Rupert Murdoch, who may have come to a point of conscience, a level of conscience, and said, we got to say something here.
Well, I would think that something like that, you wouldn't do a front page editorial in the New York Post like that, I don't think, without being sure that you were in Rupert Murdoch's good graces with that. Murdoch did encourage a ban on automatic weapons after the Newtown slaughter, and he asked for bold leadership action from Barack Obama, who was then president. Murdoch did. So I think the editors may not have needed to go to Murdoch for specific permission to do that kind of a front page thing, because I think they knew that he had already signed off on that idea.
Well, we don't know whether he was in on that or whether they checked with him or not. But I have to tell you, I thought it was fantastic. This past Sunday, I was on a panel up in Saratoga about Joseph Pulitzer and his role in the press and, you know, what's going on with the press now, and almost like what he would be doing now and what he would think about what's going on now. And then just seeing, we watched the documentary about Joseph Pulitzer, which I thought was pretty good, and then had a discussion about it. And the points about, not that we want to encourage us to get into a Spanish-American war of whatever, but the idea of newspapers taking a leadership role, I think in the growing desert of local news, that there are fewer local newspapers taking leadership roles in their communities. I know that Judy is trying very hard to turn that around in her role with the Press Association. So I think there are times when it's appropriate to try to lead, and that means with a front page editorial at times.
Yeah, the danger is that Fox News is trying to lead in a different direction.
Right. Well, I guess I agreed with this one, I thought this was great.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point that the more local the media, the more credibility it has, even though people can see all of its faults. You know, in Saratoga Springs, the people complaining about what the Saratogian was doing with the election those months ago is one thing. But I'm grateful that there is now some attention to the issue of news deserts and to the real peril that many, many communities in our country don't have news coverage. And people are getting their national news from these big aggregation sources and from network television, and to the extent that they're getting any news at all. But there is some credibility that is retained by the local newspapers. And I think it's really great that there are now foundations that are beginning to put money into supporting local media. This not-for-profit model might be one way to go.
You know, and there are studies underway to see what the impact of the loss of a local newspaper has on democracy. And people are starting to indicate that, you know, voter turnout is lower if you don't have a newspaper in your local area. I mean, the ramifications can be far-reaching, and that's something we really need to address. And I think people are addressing now. Let's hope we get somewhere with it.
You know, Alan urging us to be more self-critical is relevant to this conversation, I think. And it's worth, as we analyze what is going on with the media, it's worth thinking, did we in the 60s and 70s, as we professionalized the press and hired people who had stronger academic backgrounds and started paying reporters more and tried to be more thoughtful in our approach, did we turn the media into something other than what it was that people really cared about? Did we get too deep into sociology? And are we still there? Like, is my newspaper too far into that kind of thing so that we're not giving people what they really need?
What do you mean sociology? I'm sorry, Greg.
Well, our analytical coverage that I've always advocated, I'm wondering if I have pushed pushed in the wrong direction in that regard. When we write about why a community does what, maybe people ought to have a very simple account of what went on. The local newspaper that I was the editor of in the 1970s, that's how long ago it was, when I was 20-nothing years old, I was editor of a little paper in Rensselaer, Indiana. And we had a column of Remington News in the town of Remington, who was visiting who and which kid was home from school and so on. And people really loved reading all of that news. Have we gone too far away from that really hyper-local news coverage so that we are not giving people what they really need to have? Have we therefore damaged our credibility?
Right. We used to write about births, deaths, engagements, anniversaries, and I can remember for a long time we were saying, no, we're not going to do the ground baking. No, we're not going to do this. So we're not going to do the check presentation. And for I think in the 80s, we did say no to a lot of people because, you know, times were flush. And I think we're learning from that now that we need to get back into our newspaper the kind of things that people can't find elsewhere. Like, you know, there are engagements out there, but they're hard to find, and having them in the local paper might be a good thing.
Well, you need to celebrate local successes. And I think what you're asking about, Rex, you really need to do both. You need to have the down-home local news. And sometimes it's what your people are doing, what your school kids are doing, what the teachers and the coaches are doing, your neighbors are doing. But also, what are the issues? What are your elected officials doing? How can you get involved with this? And how can you make a difference? And analyzing those issues.
Yeah, but those
and editorializing to show leadership.
But those garden parties still mean a great deal.
They do. They're very important.
People want to read about them. I know in my time as the publisher of the Fire Island Sun, I was viciously attacked for leaving somebody out of the paper. I had nothing to do with it.
Well, I hope you weren't defensive.
Sure, I had nothing to do with it. Look, he's absolving himself of blame these 60 years later.
I cried.
we were arrogant, and it came at our expense.
Thank God we're not anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Shoot.
No, but one of the most read parts of the paper we all know are the obits, right?
And the corrections.
And the obits. And we
yes.
know that those obits
they're great.
Are pretty local, right? They are also often not accurate. In other words, we don't kick anybody on the way out usually.
Well, that's because
they're paid now.
Another chapter.
Yes, that's a good topic.
That's all we have time for today. That's it.
Oh, come on. We just got started.
Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, and I'm Rex Smith. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our producer, David Gustino. We'll see you next week on The Media Project.
Get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.